John 4, the reading that Reed had for us. The reading kind of picks up in the middle of a story. And it's a really familiar story to most of us. It is the account of Jesus encountering the woman at the well. And it's beautiful in so many ways. It's beautiful that he would even take notice of her. It's beautiful that he reveals himself to her with more detail than he has anybody else up to that point. And it's a Samaritan woman. It's a woman who has to come to the well by herself because she's not welcome around everybody else. It's a woman with a past. It's beautiful also because of this verse that's kind of in the middle of the middle. And it's, we read it and sometimes we comment on it, but sometimes it also gets overshadowed by some of the other things that are going on in the story. And so where were we at when Reed was reading? Jesus has been locked in this conversation with the lady for a while. While the disciples had trekked into town to get something to eat. And they've come back and they're shocked to see him talking to her. But I find it interesting, as many times as they question him, as many times as they challenge him, as many times as Peter is willing to put it out there, it says nobody asked him anything. But I would love to have been a fly on the wall and seen the look on the disciples' faces at certain times in Jesus' ministry. To walk up and see him talking to this woman. And then after she leaves to try to encourage him to eat, and he makes that really odd statement to them, I have food that you don't know anything about. And the puzzled look that would be on their faces at that point. And so they're discussing amongst themselves, did someone bring him something that we don't know anything about? And then there's our verse. It's verse 34. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. My food. Food is, for many of us, a totality of life. We leave one meal and we're thinking of the next. I came across the road tonight eating one of the peaches that Marianne and Marty brought me, and it was about a pound and a quarter. I thought I was eating a cantaloupe. It was huge. But by the time I washed the juice off of my hands, I was thinking about the next cucumber that I'll eat for dinner tonight. That's just the way we are. Food, when Jesus uses it in this image, is kind of this totality of life. I'm consumed by doing the will of the Father. I'm consumed by being busy and accomplishing the mission to do the will of him and to accomplish his work. Basically, he tells the disciples, I'm not here for lunch. I'm not here for dinner. I'm here to focus on the plan. There's this limited amount of time that I have, and I've got to accomplish certain things. And that, if we think about it, is true for all of us. Because in John 9 and verse 4, he lumps us in with that. We must carry out, number one, the works of him who sent me. So we're here for very specific reasons. And two, the limited time to accomplish this, as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. Guys, Jesus tells the disciples, guys, I don't have time to stop for lunch. I have this one encounter with this woman, and I have so much work I need to do that I need to get it done. She's about to bring all these people back from town. And I'm going to have to Utilize the moment. Now then, the reason that fascinates me so much, and the reason the most recent time I was reading the story that verse out of all of these jumped off the page for me, is not only is that verse sort of the middle of this story, it's sort of the middle of a running theme in the life of Jesus. This is what I mean. It starts in Luke 2, verse 49. Where is Jesus in Luke 2? He's in the temple, right? They've been to the feast. Mary and Joseph had started home and they've come back because, what, they had an Amber Alert of their own. They look around and Jesus is not with them. So they go back and Jesus is in the temple and they're shocked to find him there and they're questioning him as to why. Do you not understand that I have to be about my Father's business? I want you to point out, I'm going to point out something. Before I do, I want you to remember that he is 12 years old. So I want you to take that 12-year-old, and now I want to point out that he not only saw the urgency of starting, that starting moment in his life, I have to be about my Father's business. He is getting started on the road. And he also sees the mission. I didn't come to the temple to be disobedient to you. I didn't come to the temple to make you turn around and walk back to Jerusalem to find me. I came to the temple because I have a limited amount of time to get so much done that I need to get started now. So he sees the plan. He sees the job at hand. He sees the Father's part in it. And that's a theme that runs all the way through his life, that ends in passages like John chapter 17. And I want you to go ahead and turn there because we're also going to look in chapter 19. John chapter 17 in verse 4. In a one-on-one conversation with the Father, as he's praying about all these things for us, he says, I glorified thee on earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do. So there is this theme from the age of 12 to the age of 33-ish of accomplishment, of doing the task at hand. What's he say in chapter 19? It's finished. It's done. I did it. Chapter 19, verse 30, excuse me, it's finished. Right prior to that, it says, him realizing everything has been accomplished to fulfill Scripture, he asked for that drink. So in the middle, we're seeing John 4. Bookended by the age of 12 and the age of 33-ish, when he starts it and when he finishes it. So for a few minutes, focus on the middle. Staying in John, go back to chapter 4, and I want to read again verse 34, and then we're going to look around it in a couple of close chapters. 4:34, my food, my totality, what preserves me and carries me on to the next step, is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. So don't bother me with dinner. I have work to do. Flip a page, chapter 5. I can do nothing on my own initiative. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just. I do not seek my will, but the will of him who sent me. He said, I understand that I was sent on a mission. I wasn't sent here to enjoy life. I wasn't sent here to accomplish my own accomplishments. I wasn't sent here to rack up the accolades. He said, I was sent on a mission directly from the Father. I didn't initiate it, but I'm going to carry it out. Verse 36, same chapter. The witness which I have is greater than that of John. And remember, John's this supreme individual as far as humanity goes. No one born of woman greater than John. The works which the Father has given me to accomplish. Okay, so the tasks that I have, the things I'm doing, the things I'm about to do, the very works that I do bear witness of me that the Father sent me. So Jesus says, I have certain things to do. God gave me a checklist. The Father gave me a checklist of things that I have to get done in the next 3 years. And those things, as I do them, are going to bear witness to who I am and to my mission. Chapter 6, verse 38. I've come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of Him who sent me. So again, not here for me. I'm here for Him. In this middle of middle. And so what I want you to catch is this. The point of the middle. This point where we've picked up between 12 years old and the cross. Is Jesus never quit. He never lost sight of the plan. He never lost focus of what He was supposed to accomplish, where He was supposed to be, what He was supposed to do, who He was supposed to be, and the why. He went from point A, the starting point at 12, all the way through the middle. Where does everything in the life of Jesus happen? Same place it does for us, in the middle. You know, we're born, we're really not that much aware of it, and as we're going out, we finished it all. So it all happens in between A and B. It all happened in the middle. Read through the gospel sometime, and I'm always giving you reading assignments and different things to focus on in the life of Jesus. Read through the gospels sometime and watch the times that Jesus takes a break. The times that He takes a break maybe to pray. He sends the others away and He goes up on the mountain to pray. Or the time that He takes away from the multitudes to work with the 12 privately. The moment that He takes a nap in the bottom of the boat. And what I want you to notice as you read those is they are always limited. They're always very short. And He's what? He's always right back to work. He's always right back to the checklist because He has things He has to accomplish in a limited amount of time. He has people He has to touch in a limited amount of time. And so He's constantly on the run. And He never quits. If there is ever anyone in the history of the world with the right to throw up his hands and say, Father, I'm done with the checklist. I'm done with the mission. If there's anyone who has the right to quit, it's Jesus. Sometimes we are tempted to quit for the silliest of reasons. Or we take an extended break for the slightest cause. And yet here's Jesus who never quits meeting with the disciples, even though Judas turns out to be a thief. You know, you've heard that, I'm not going to go to church down there because so-and-so does this and so. Jesus keeps meeting with guys who, one of them's a thief. He turns out to be Benedict Arnold. Peter's got enough problems to write a whole book about. And yet Jesus keeps associating with these. He didn't quit on them. He didn't quit working with Peter, even though he's as hard-headed as a stump. He didn't quit working with Matthew, even though he's a tax collector. He didn't quit preaching, even though most of the people that are listening to him are what? They're going to turn on him. They're going to go from Hosanna to the King to crucify him in hours. He didn't quit living right just because the world around him was not living right. In fact, it seemed that nobody was getting it right. He didn't quit loving and forgiving, even though he lived in a world that was very unforgiving and very divided and hateful at times. The division between Jew and Gentile, the division between Jew and Samaritan, between Jew and Roman. He didn't quit the work, even though he's surrounded by Pharisees. He didn't quit the work when he gives the call and who responds? An adulterous woman, tax collectors, sinners, people who cause him to have the reputation that we talked about not long ago, him embracing being the friend of sinners. He doesn't give up, even though every time he takes a step outside the door, someone needs something. He doesn't quit, even though the 12 he's working with, have you ever met those people that you had to baby them to keep them faithful? That you're constantly having to monitor them, meet every time? These guys are, those 12, that's them. If there's ever anyone who has the right to look at the disciples because they're slow to catch on and say, go on guys, I'm done with you. Give me 12 more. His enemies, they're vocal. Right? He doesn't have hidden enemies. They are aggressive. They are out to kill him. And yet all the way through the middle, I have a job to do. I have something to accomplish. Any reason we might have to get tired of the work, to get tired of the people, Jesus could give the same reason with interest. And yet he didn't quit on us. There he is, right there in the middle, going all the way to the end. At 12, I got to get started. In the middle, I got to keep going. At the end, do you realize there's even a point in the middle in Matthew chapter 16 where Jesus has to tell Peter, and certainly I'm paraphrasing, but he basically tells Peter, get out of my way. You're impeding the progress. Get behind me, Satan. Your mind is not on the things of God. I have to do certain things, and one of them is go to Jerusalem to die. Get out of my way. And then at the end to say, I made it. I did it. When you get to the end, regardless when or how it comes, will you be able to say, I did it? And the importance of that relates to this. We have no idea how much time we have to accomplish the checklist. Jesus did. He knew the urgency of that 3-year span. We have no idea. And so as we've been singing about being workers and we've been praying about finding the next person to teach the gospel to, as Marcus did, that's our checklist. And yet I don't know how long I have to fill in the blanks. God knows. God's given me tasks that I can accomplish. So I better be at work, because when I get there, the excuse, I didn't have enough time, is not going to be enough. Am I going to be able to say it's finished? What is it Paul said in Timothy? As he's nearing the end of his life, he writes to this young man and he's encouraging him. And one of the things that he tells them to encourage him is what? I fought the good fight. I finished the course. I've kept the faith. Will I be able to say that? I finished it. I ran the whole course and I broke the tape. Or am I going to have to tell God, I started, but I quit. Or I started and I ran out of time because I dawdled on the way. I thought you were going to give me 60 years to finish it and you only gave me 40, so I only got part of the list done. Based on what we've looked at in the life of Jesus, I want to ask the question. At that point, what excuse is going to be good enough to appease God? Well, you didn't give me the right people to work with. From a human perspective, Jesus didn't have the right people to work with. You didn't give me the right crowds to preach to. What excuse is he going to accept? What excuse is going to allow him to make me the exception if I didn't finish? History is full of starters who quit. We talked about one this morning with Demas. We see Judas that we've already mentioned tonight. It's not the starters that make the history books, though. From a human perspective, we've heard the story of Edison, you know, tried 1,000 different combinations before he finds the one that works. What if he had tried 999 and quit? He would be a footnote and somebody else would be the headline. Now then, understand, I'm not talking about us trying to make headlines, but I'm talking about being the ones that make the difference. And I want to quickly go back to Jesus, and I'm going to give you this as we close. The plan itself was enough to tempt him to quit. And if you don't believe me, just look at him in the garden. If you're sweating so hard that it is turning into blood, and you are begging your Father for another way out, the plan is enough to make you want to quit. And yet he's never asked me anything as hard as that. What right would I ever have to quit? He finished it. I do not have an excuse. And here's the thing, I do not want to be a footnote. Because remember, I want to make the book, the Lamb's Book of Life. See, there's no footnotes in there. There's just the list of those washed in the blood of the Lamb who finished it. We got to carry it all the way to the end. He never promised a reward to anybody who started but never finished. What about you? Right now, you're in the middle. Right now is when everything is happening. And you have a spiritual checklist from God of things that you need to accomplish. Are you marking them off? Or are you making excuses as we stand and sing?